All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley, that dude.
Yes, sir.
Coming up, we'll tell you if my man Sean McVay will keep it rolling against the Saints. My man Sean McVay.
Okay, that's how you treat your friends. And if Andy Reid will exercise some playoff demons against the Patriots this week. But we start every day with a Whitlock, so what you about to lie about today?
Oh, we're going to talk about Tom Brady, the greatest American athlete of his generation, bar none. Mm. That includes Tiger Woods, LeBron James, Serena Williams, and Floyd Mayweather. Tom Brady is the Muhammad Ali of his era. Yesterday, with a lot of the sports world predicting the fall of the 41-year-old quarterback, Brady pulled off a vintage Brady performance against a talented Chargers defense. Brady completed 34 of 44 passes for 343 yards, leading the Patriots to an easy victory and their eighth straight AFC championship. That's just incredible. Mm. Football is such a complex, difficult game. There are so many variables. And the one-and-done nature of the NFL playoffs makes the streak even more improbable. Much is made of LeBron James' eight straight NBA Finals appearances. It's an impressive streak, but it's not that shocking given the NBA's best-of-seven playoff format. It favors the team with the most talent. Brady and the Patriots have rarely overwhelmed the NFL with talent. They overwhelm with preparation, attention to detail, and heart. For my money, Brady's career is the closest thing we've seen to Muhammad Ali's. Mm. I say that because I think Brady and Ali are the all-time great champions whose will to win exceeded their skill. It's easy to get caught up in Ali's flashy foot movement, brash talk, and dazzling hand speed, but what separated Ali from everyone else was his mind, his faith, his resolve. Ali won fights he had absolutely no business winning. Boxing, by its very nature, is an imposition of will. Ali's will to win exceeded George Foreman's in Zaire, Joe Frazier's in Manila, and Ken Norton's at the Forum in Inglewood. At the heavyweight division, boxing is a sport that favors the heaviest hands. Foreman, Frazier, Norton, Sonny Liston, and Ernie Shavers all had heavier hands than Ali. They couldn't match Ali's heart. Heart is what separates Tom Brady from his peers. Heart is what puts Brady in the same class as Ali. Brady has a boulder on his shoulder.
They're a good team, and we played them earlier this year. You know, I know, you know, everyone thinks we suck and, you know, can't win any games, so we'll see. It'll be fun.
All right, no disrespect to Tiger and Michael Jordan. I believe their will and skill were equal. But in my view, LeBron's and Sabrina's skill exceed their will. It's cliche to talk about the heart of a champion, but it matters. Some athletes have heart in abundance, others don't. It's why a lot of boxers don't take Floyd Mayweather's undefeated record all that seriously. He avoided the best fighters when they were in their primes. Ali fought Frazier and Norton three different times each. When it comes to Brady versus LeBron, it's not really even a discussion after the way LeBron finished his first stint in Cleveland and performed in his first NBA Finals with the Heat. Tom Brady is the lone athlete in the same class as Muhammad Ali. All right, joining the desk now, Hall of Famer Eric Dickerson, future Hall of Famer Tony Gonzalez. Marcellus, I will start with you.
Yes, sir, 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 yes.
Fair comparison, Ali and Tom Brady.
God, let's start with the greatness comparison. Yeah. He's the greatest athlete of this generation. Yes, I'll have to agree with you. No argument there. Well, if all things are equal in all sports, and we're talking about some of the individual sports, tennis, you brought up boxing, you talk about golf with Tiger Woods, and then you talk about basketball, and obviously football. I have to give the edge to the football great over any other sport just because it's much more difficult to win that championship because you are dependent upon so many more variables and individuals to help you achieve that success. So in football, you could be the greatest quarterback, Dan Marino, and then look around and you don't have all the other great parts and you may not have the greatest assets supporting you, and then next thing you know, you don't win that championship, and then you do take that demerit. So Tiger Woods comes to mind as a close second, obviously Ali, but what Tom Brady has shown by his career record, and that career record is with so many moving pieces, and he still is the one constant that, as you said, football is a great game of skill, a greater game of will. For whatever reason, he has willed not only the Patriots, but he's willed his coach into being in the discussion as the greatest coach ever. When his coach as a head coach was a losing head coach before Tom Brady stepped on the field. All those things considered, I'm with you. I'm with you, Witt. Tom Brady's the greatest.
Go ahead, Rambassador.
Man. No? Come on, dog.
Me too?
What? You too.
What? Hey,
look, Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback. You know, I'm going to give him that. You know, I'm a Joe Montana fan. He's the greatest quarterback. But when you put him in the same breath as Muhammad Ali, that's totally, that's different. I mean, Ali's in a class all by himself.
We're talking about in the ring, in the field of competition.
I understand that. I understand that. You know, without Bill Belichick, Tom Brady's not Tom Brady. Without, no, I don't think he is. I mean, if you put, but that's a lot of ifs. It's like if you put Tom Brady in Cincinnati, is he the Tom Brady we know without Bill Belichick? No, he's not. I think about, you say
Tiger Woods. What was New England before Brady?
Yeah, and what was Belichick before Brady as a head coach?
Had they been to Super Bowls before?
Who?
The Bengals have been in the Super Bowl, too.
Had they been, though? Yeah,
so okay. You didn't come to me, though. What was Belichick before?
I'm sorry. He was a young head coach, but can I finish?
Young? It's in the 6 year, 7th year. What you mean young?
He's
in the 6 year.
Can I finish?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Rambassador.
You're right, though. I'm the Rambassador. We're talking about Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods revolutionized golf. He changed it. He changed the way we as black athletes look at golf. You know, a lot of us, man, true. I'm like, golf, man, don't watch no golf. Nobody want to watch golf. Now, man, I can't wait to watch golf. Can't wait to watch Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods even changed the pay scale of golf. Even the golfers talk about how when I'm out there playing, even in the pro-ams, the caddies, they say, man, you can say what you want.
Hey,
you might not like Tiger. Hold on.
I was right there.
Hold on. Let me finish. You might not like Tiger, he said, but Tiger has changed the way that we get paid. And he's changed everything.
I was right there with
you. Were you right there?
Until Thanksgiving 2009.
Then
Thanksgiving. Tiger Woods got clubbed by his wife, and he ain't been the same since.
Hey, man, you get your teeth knocked out by
that changes everything. Take a nine.
What are you talking about? Because this question, first of all, Belichick, I think he deserves a lot more credit than what you guys are giving
him.
His record without Tom Brady, when Tom Brady went down for that season, when Matt Castle came in.
AC, he already had that thing rolling. Yeah.
What are you talking about? First of all, they did well.
He's not the greatest athlete of this generation.
No, I don't. First of all, what are you talking about, athlete? Okay, can he come and he? Have you seen him run the 40?
There we go.
Have you seen him dance in Brazil?
There we go. Thank you.
I'm talking about. Okay, what do you mean, athlete?
I thought he meant accomplishments. Because I'm not going skill.
It's not skill. Okay,
we're talking about accomplishments.
Okay, you're talking about accomplishments. Okay, when you say athlete, I'm like, okay, wait a second.
That's what he said, athlete.
I play 1-on-1 against Tom. I play him with left hand. Actually, he's a really good athlete. He's a professional athlete. I love Tom.
Yeah.
But I think you have to understand what are the parameters of this discussion. Accomplishments, okay? From an accomplishment standpoint, you know I love Tom Brady because I think he's probably the best competitor. I would say he's the best competitor ever because he's willing to take less money. He wants to win that badly that he'll take less money. He's left over $100 million on the table to win championships. In football, as you said, though, I'm a little surprised, Marcellus, when you say that football, it's harder to win. I'm not going to give Tom Brady all the credit for that. You got to have great coaching. You got to have great players around you to win a football game. You can't just I agree with what you said. If he was in Cincinnati all those years or was in Buffalo or whatever it is,
Cleveland,
and he doesn't have those players around him and that great coach, it's a perfect storm that's going on up there with Tom. And Tom, make no mistake about it, that everything, his preparation, his willingness to put everything into it, he has no other life. I believe everything he says, it is all about winning for him and that coach. Coach Belichick said, stats are for losers. I don't think he meant you're a loser, like on the playground. I mean, he's saying literally you worry about stats, and Tom Brady does not care about stats.
Well,
he never has, he never will. And that's what makes him
Belichick
the great in my mind.
I believe that Belichick is amazing, but what I want to do is just make sure we reset what the conversation is about who is better or who gets the credit, Belichick or Brady. I think it's more Brady. Think about it. Belichick had 5 entire coaching seasons as a head coach in Cleveland and in New England before Brady steps on the field. And Belichick lost more than he won. Now, injury occurs, Brady comes on, and all of a sudden this losing coach becomes a winning coach, and not only winning coach, to the greatest of all time coach. And then we sit there and says that Tom Brady's legacy takes a backseat to Belichick's greatness. For that, I'm like, nope, I'm resetting that. Tom Brady's the one that held Belichick more so than the other way around. We didn't know who Brady was in the pros until he showed up Super Bowl championship first year out there. So all I'm saying is, this guy is the greatest, and I'm reluctant to say this because I'm like you on the field, in the locker room, like, he's not a great athlete. But when you add everything up, he has to be at the top of that mountain because he has the greatest
accomplishment. Let me put this in as well. I think most people regard Muhammad Ali as the greatest. He dubbed himself that. You could beat Muhammad Ali in basketball. You could probably outrun him in the 40. But he's still regarded as the greatest. That's the conversation we're having about Tom Brady. It's not about who runs the fastest 40. It's about who maxed out their athletic greatness to the utmost. Yeah. And to me, no one. I put Muhammad Ali and Tom Brady in terms of maxing out their skill, whatever their God-given talents. I'd probably put Jordan right there with him, but Jordan just had so much. To me, he's more talented than Brady and Ali. And this, to me, there's something about Ali and Brady's will and heart that just takes them to another level athletes.
No one will, you can't convince me that anybody is the greatest ever. Anybody, and I've had people call me one of the greatest ever, and I would still say that no, you can, because you can make that argument for Gronk, you can make that argument for Ozzie Newsome, for Kellen, you can make that argument. You can't tell me, and first of all, it's just specifically to this sport. Of all time, there are great weightlifters that have won Olympic gold medals that were the best.
We don't talk about them on this show.
Jerry Rice got the most out of his body, I think. He wasn't the fastest, wasn't the strongest.
Yeah.
But look what he did over his career.
Right. Put him in Cincinnati.
I just don't understand.
Put Jerry in Cincinnati.
But hold on, Eric. I put you in.
Put me in Cleveland.
And you in Indianapolis.
You don't think you're Eric Dickerson?
Thank you.
You're not Eric Dickerson anymore?
I'll give you a good example. You just said, I was in Indianapolis.
Right.
When I went to Indianapolis from the L.A. Rams, it changed because that system didn't fit me the same. That system fit me in L.A. That system was tailor-made for me. In 4 years, I had almost over 8,000 yards in 4 years. When I went to Indianapolis, it dropped off. No, my skill didn't drop off, but all the guys around me dropped off.
Eric, I say this with great affection and great respect. The exact same thing could be said. You weren't the kind of leader that Tom Brady is.
As a running back,
it didn't matter. If they flipped you to quarterback, you're not the kind of leader, and neither was I, and neither was a lot of other people.
Yeah, I'll say this much. Look, I never wanted that on my back. That,
I know.
I went out. I was not that rah-rah guy.
I know.
I was a guy that, hey, when you call me my number, I'm going to do my job. I'm going to be there on time. I'm going to do my part and some. And that's what I believe in preparing for a football game.
What's the greatest? What's your favorite food? What's the best
tacos.
Food of all
Eat tacos
time?
Tacos.
The best food of all time.
Tacos.
For you, it is.
What Thank ketchup?
You. For me, it'd be different. For you, it'd be different.
Exactly.
I'm just saying, this is why I'm
Don't
saying
do that,
you can't
Tony.
Answer this question.
Tony.
There's no
That's
right
dive,
or wrong
Tony.
Answer to this
Tony,
question.
That is a dive. And you know why? Because, look, in all respect, if we're sitting here ranking football players. You're 4, I'm 3. That's solid. Y'all gonna have to fight for number 1 overall, right? So when we make these arguments, it's amazing that when we're climbing up and saying who's the greatest, we stop short of saying the greatest. You know that I was better than Whitlock. You know you were better than me. You don't know if you was better than Eric. Eric doesn't know if you was better than Tony. But maybe I would go 2-1. Point is, we can have this conversation. We can lock it in on one guy. We just got to go.
How can
go
you lock it in?
Because of impact. Because of what you did to the position, to the game.
You can't have an opinion on it?
Yeah, you can have an opinion on it, for sure.
Right. That's
for sure.
All we're
but
doing.
But I'm just saying, for me, I'm going to say,
Tom.
You can say Tom Brady. What about Peyton Manning?
You're going to dodge and not have an opinion.
No, I'm not going to dodge. Don't do that. Don't say, if you're not with me, you're against me.
That's not what I'm saying.
Don't do that.
What I'm saying is, you want to die, man, I might be at a party with Tom Brady. Man, I might be at a party with Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
I'm going to dodge this issue.
Nah, it's not a dodge at all. Who would I want to play with of all time ever? I'd probably say, Tom or
Brady.
Peyton.
Peyton's my favorite quarterback, but he's not greater than Tom Brady.
I would take Joe Montana. I played with him in the Pro Bowl. The luxury, I'm like, man, this guy can throw the football. Golly, if I had this. You know, and you said it best. You said it best, Tony. It depends on who you think. Like, people say, Jim Brown's the greatest. Eric, you're the greatest. I never say, look, I say, it depends on who you like, who you saw play. 20, 30 years from now, kids gonna be like, Tom Brady, you know,
but first of all, there are things that separate.
You're right.
Accomplishments. And Eric, there's the accomplishments matter. You're having the record for the most yards in the individual season. That matters when you get in a debate about you or Barry Sanders.
Yeah.
And again, people can go either way, but you can judge people's accomplishments. We've never seen, other than to me, Ali, seen a guy with this level of accomplishment overcome the kind of odds against opponents. The Chargers, to me, were the better team.
They were.
But Brady has been a part of establishing a culture in New England that it doesn't matter if you're better than them.
You
better show up more prepared than them or there's a problem.
I agree with
and that's
you.
The same thing Muhammad Ali had, and that's why of this generation, he's the Ali.
What makes him so... Tom is a great quarterback. I still believe with him and Belichick, it makes him even greater. He wouldn't be Tom
without
Belichick.
Angelo Dundee made Muhammad Ali
better. Exactly, but you got... There you go. Both working together. You take one away, it's a different mix.
A lot of people ain't easy to work with, and to me, that undermines their accomplishments. People have said it about me. Hard
to
coach.
Easy to work with.
Yeah, I would have.
Check back in a year.
That's part of what makes Brady great.
This has been the perfect storm. Those guys finding each other.
Exactly.
You mean Belichick finding Brady?
Belichick finding Brady.
Because he was losing without Brady. Brady said, hey, don't put that on me.
I know if Belichick is sitting here and he cared, which I don't think he cares, he'd say, well, look at my record when Tom wasn't there. Just look at that when Brissett comes in, when Garoppolo comes in. We still roll and we win. Whatever it is, they went to the playoffs. They won 11 games with Matt Cassel. Stuff,
they didn't go to the playoffs that year.
They won 11 games.
They won 11 games.
But still, you're right. Are they a better team with Tom? Yeah, Tom is one of the greatest of all time. In fact, I'll take back my answer now because what I said before. Yes, I'm picking Tom. If I'm starting a franchise in NFL history, I'll probably start it with Tom Brady. Not because of his skills on the field, because of off the field, what he brings, his leadership, and then his ability to say, I'll take less money so we can build a championship franchise.
All we need is 5 more minutes.
I'm going to win rings with him.
You ain't going to convince me.
5 more minutes, producer.
You just agreed with me. Why'd you go through all that trouble?
No, agree with him. See that?
I said before, no, because it's still. I'm still not going to say he's. I would not take away your answer saying you're wrong if you say Muhammad Ali or Tiger Woods or anybody else or Serena or
Tiger.
Anybody.
Right. Yeah, but I can't say the wrong answer though. I could go. I mean, if I'm not going to pick on anybody, but you know, there's a guy I could say, and you're like, dude, that doesn't count. So it's amazing that it's okay to say that about a guy who doesn't have enough accomplishments, doesn't have enough to their resume where you're like, he's not qualified. But then within qualified quarterbacks, Joe Montana, Peyton Manning, et cetera, how come we just can't give one the crown? For me, if you're forcing me to answer that, and I'm not saying you have to believe that, but if you're forcing me to answer it, Tom Brady's proven enough already that he is the GOAT.
Jason Whitlock and Nostradamus Wiley over here. And you know what? I forgot the costumes are gone.
What do you mean you forgot?
I forgot. I had it. I forgot.
You wouldn't have forgot if you won. But like, where is it? Now you forget when you lose to bring it.
We're joined now by Rambassador Eric Dickerson. What is that you got around your neck?
These my beads. I'm going to go to New Orleans, baby. What you think? I got my voodoo beads on me.
And the NFL Network's Bucky Brooks. All right, let's move to the big story. Right here in Los Angeles, where the Rams beat the Cowboys Saturday night to advance to the NFC Championship game, my favorite coach, Sean McVay, had a brilliant game plan running the ball down Dallas's throat with both Todd Gurley and C.J. Anderson rushing for over 100 yards. Mm. Not only that, the Rams' usually porous run defense completely shut down Ezekiel Elliott, holding the NFL's leading rusher to just 47 yards. This game blew me away.
Yeah.
Because it did. I thought, hey, the Rams might go out there and X and O it up and just put on an offensive show. But to me, this sounds silly, but it's like, was Sean McVay watching this show and said, I'm going to show Jason Whitlock I'm a real football coach. Mm. Because, because it's like, I knew the guy could draw him up. I didn't know he could control men.
Yeah.
And that's what he did. He took this Rams team and said, you know what? They think we Hollywood glitz. They think we soft. Let's go out and show them. We can beat Dallas at their own game.
That's crazy you say that. Was he watching this show? Because that's my dog. That's my man. He said, you know, in the locker room, they had a little package of of clips and things that they show to get them pumped up. So let's take a look at that and see what we got the Rams going right here.
Rams coach Sean McVay is starting to remind me of the last 5'7" bombshell to emerge from nowhere, ride a wave of unprecedented hype, and briefly rock the sports world. Is Sean McVay Ronda Rousey's brother from another mother?
Oh, my.
Cute and cuddly, fool America every single time, and McVay might be football's Hannah Montana and Gary Coleman rolled into the same headset and playbook.
Yeah, that'll get you going.
Man, come on.
That'll get you going, man. The boys saw that clip. They were like, what? What? They said, look, you calling a coach out? You calling them Kardashian? Hannah Montana. Hannah Montana. Hannah Montana. They went Hollywood. Said, no, no, no. Let's make a left, dog. Hey, bust a right right here. They went on Figueroa on them boys. They went Figueroa South Central on the Cowboys and lit them boys up. So, hey, we're like, watch what you say. People watching out there.
Oh, man. Eric, I was blown away.
You know what? I've been saying it all week. I said it all last week. Run the football. Run the football. I said the Cowboys have a good defense, but if you run the football, running the football sets everything up. You know, C.J. Anderson is the best pickup that we could possibly have gotten. Because, you know, Todd Gurley, I still think he's a little bit hurt. And C.J. Anderson is a downhill runner. Anytime you have 200 yards in a playoff game, you should win the football game. As we're standing there watching that game, they were dominating, and I mean dominating, the Cowboys' defensive front. I'm like, oh, if we don't turn the ball over at all, we're going to win this game. I mean, and that's what we did.
I mean, I think what they have done is they've stumbled into a recipe that could really make them the champion at the end of it. C.J. Anderson coming over has given them that downhill running game. And when you look at Todd Gurley, Todd Gurley's really at his best running on the edges. And so, Marcellus, you remember how that old Alice Gibbs offensive line with the Denver Broncos, when they're running the zone and they're cut blocking? When I'm looking at the Rams and how they were slicing through the Cowboys, I was like, you know what? Sometimes we forget that McVay is a Mike Shanahan disciple. And this running game is problematic because they cut you on the backside, and you notice the Cowboys are beginning to tap out, and that steady dose of C.J. Anderson and Todd Gurley takes the pressure off Jared Goff. The Rams are tough. They may have found the winning recipe.
I don't think that really the Saints have a chance, and I know I'm going way too far the other direction, but that was the most dominant performance of the weekend. The score doesn't indicate it. It looks like it was a one-possession game. It wasn't. That was a butt-whipping on both sides of the ball from both the offensive front and the defensive front. And Ndamukong Suh's like, okay, y'all want to criticize me?
Yeah.
Okay, right. Let me show. I am Ndamukong Suh.
Don't forget. And
I'm a problem. And I got to just hat tip. I really think that formula will go up to New Orleans and they'll put it on the Saints as well.
Yeah, I agree with the fact that the Saints are in trouble right now, because that was a fifth-ranked rush defense you were going against. This was a team that only gave up 73 yards to the Seahawks the week before, and the Seahawks were number one in rushing.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, we're going to do exactly what they don't want us to do, which is we're going to run the football. And we're going to run it to the tune of 273 yards. As our defensive coach used to say, and we used to play, I had to go against the back-to-back Bronco years with Terrell Davis and Elway. And you said it. Coach would say, they out there soul snatching. Like, because the first quarter, everybody's like trying to play stout and plot a discipline gap, and then your knees are gone. Then in the second quarter, you're dealing with that bowling ball. And it's coming, and you start to rise up trying to tackle. And then next thing you know, third, fourth quarter, you're bouncing off those tackles, or you don't even want them at all. And that's what happened. They were soul snatching out there. That entire defense of the Cowboys, forget coming back and saying next year we'll get them. They go out to reset how they attack teams like this, because that game plan was exposed immediately.
One of the big plays in that game was that fourth and one. Yeah. When they stuffed it, because if you think about this, people have been running down the middle of the Rams defense off, giving up 5.1 yards to rush. I mean, and I'm like, I hope they don't run the read option. Just run it up the middle. And when they ramped the middle, I think Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Donald, to me, man, he changes everybody's game plan. You have to change the game plan for him. To me, set the tone of this game. Like, hey, when they stopped him right there, I think on the out 35-yard line, I said, This is the game.
No, I think that is true. And now we're beginning to see the star power show up when it really matters. And Ndamukong Suh showed up in the playoff game, made a play. Aqib Talib coming back really helps them, because now Marcus Peters can go back to being kind of like the number two corner in this matchup that they have coming up against the Saints. And I think it's big. I think there's something about the stars that they brought over. This is why they paid the big money to have them, because the playoffs are decided by the stars. Your star players have to step up. The Rams have their guys playing well at the right time.
And these are the stars that Jason said that Sean can't control. Whoa. He can't control these guys. He's got Talib. He's got Sue. Man, they're going to be doing that. They're going to be arrested. They're going to all kind of stuff. Did you say that?
I was there
Thank
wrong.
Thank you.
This dude's a leader of men. Because, again, the speech you have to give in order to get your team to play that game, we just going to go out here and mug these guys?
Yes.
That's a hell of a speech. I didn't think he had that in him. All right, welcome back with Locke and Wiley. We're joined now by NBA champion Dante Jones.
Yes, sir.
Let's move to the NBA, where the Lakers' season has taken a huge turn for the worse since LeBron James went down with a groin injury. LA is just 3-7 without LeBron, including a bad losses to the Cavaliers and the Knicks. And now Luke Walton is considering a lineup change, but speculation is growing that the Lakers brass might be considering a coaching change, especially if they lose to the lowly Bulls tonight. All right, Magic Johnson, when he gave that half-hearted vote of confidence, said, unless something drastic happens, Luke Walton will keep his job. And you know what drastic happened? LeBron James went down and said, you know what? I'm going to come back after Luke is gone.
Wow, you going that far with that wit?
So
you don't believe that in your heart.
Yeah, come on, man.
Really? No, not with a groin injury. As soon as he hurt his groin, I remember they showed and zoomed in on his lips. He said, I felt the pop. Once he said that, I told everybody in the room, I said, that's a month. At his age.
Easy.
I think you read his lips wrong.
What is it?
I think he said, I want Popovich.
And I ain't coming back until I get what I want. I think Popovich want him too, the way the Spurs played a little bit. This is weird. This is tough, because Luke Walton shouldn't be graded right now without his best player on his roster. Think about it. The entire offseason, training camp.
I mean, it's bigger than that.
The best in the world. Oh, and you designed a plan with him. Bigger than him. Bigger than Nino. Yeah. The whole plan is LeBron focused. Yeah. And then LeBron's gone, and you know what it is. Athlete nature. All right, we're going to try and play together, but it's time to get those suppressed numbers back up. And there is like a lot of individual parts, especially offensively. Defensively, it's a better team without LeBron. They went from 10th to 2nd in defensive rating, but that's not helping them win games because they're not putting up the points. I just say, this is mulligan time if you're talking about Luke Walton. You do not grade a guy without his best player on the court. When last seen with this team,
what
they
the
won
against
Golden
State. What if the best player doing the grading he doesn't want to pass the coach?
One thing I know about his character is if he can play, he will play. Like, that's not in the discussion with me in my personal opinion about LeBron James, because he's a guy that likes to go out there, perform, play his game. The mind games and control of the organization is not something that he does as a person. It's just that's what the media's perception of him is.
He has an opinion
on different things, but it's not necessarily I'm going to go in and make a commandment to the ownership board or organization. However, is the scrutiny on Luke Walton unfair? Yes, but the scrutiny on all NBA coaches is unfair. And the scrutiny right now is not about the performance without LeBron James. It's about beating teams that you're supposed to be, beating teams that you're better than. Chicago, New York, Minnesota, Cleveland. They're better than them without LeBron James. And the ability, their roster is better than them.
They won 35 games last year without LeBron.
But those teams are not winning basketball teams, and you should be able to put together a team that goes out there and communicates and plays defense and is inspired. Yeah. And those are the things that coaches are judged upon, whether he's lost the ear of the team. And we don't know that from the outside. The organization knows that if those guys are not prepared and not motivated on a daily basis, if they're not responding to him, that's how he's going to be evaluated. Do I think it's unfair? Yes, but that's what your job is as a coach. Your job is to inspire, lead, communicate, get guys to go through and take care of game plans. And if you can't do it without your best player, then you have to be held responsible in some respect.
Well, I'm not going to dance, and I'm sure you guys aren't either. The elephant in the room is
this is not their hire in Luke Walton. So you know how it is. When we don't feel you to the nth degree, we're always looking for evidence to get you out. And it's just like right now, this is more ammunition towards that evidence that Luke Walton's not our guy. If they would have walked
Pelinka.
Right. Magic and Pelinka, if they would have walked in with the spirit that he is their guy, glass half full, then this wouldn't be evidence of that. This would be evidence of this is a good team, close, but they need the star power. Now we're using this as evidence, oh, Luke Walton can't command the guys because without LeBron, this team can't win.
Well, his comments after the Minnesota game when he said the guys are not playing hard and they're not communicating, that's your job, to get them to communicate and play hard, honestly and truthfully. And he can be judged on those things. Yes, it's very, very, very unfair. And you're absolutely correct. When you come in as a GM and as a president, your job is to be able to put the best product you can out there on the floor. And that's coach and players. And you are held responsible for hires that maybe not are yours at times and their production.
This will sound critical, but it's not. It's just factual. There's a force within the Lakers organization that's stronger than everything else, stronger than Jeannie Buss, stronger than Magic, Pelinka, Walton, and it's LeBron James. LeBron James is a force of nature within basketball that has a solar system and an energy source all its own. And when you take that away, I think it becomes harder to coach Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, everybody else on the team, because LeBron is your source of power. He's Samson's long hair. And so I'm going to reference Dave McMiniman from ESPN, has been covering LeBron for a long time. Here's what he said in a story last Friday. While James 34 could be in line to return in time for the Lakers game against the Thunder this Thursday, he will take a cautious approach and is prepared to be out multiple weeks if that's what it takes to return at 100%. A source familiar with James's thinking told ESPN. And this is where my point, Dante, is like, look, man, in the NBA, the regular season in January, February, there's a lot of guys that ain't 100%. NFL, mid-season, a lot of guys ain't 100%, but they're out there. And this is a calculated decision. Again, look, if LeBron wants a different coach, they need to give it to him.
You can speak to this and after this. When you have injuries when you're older, it's a total different ball game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they linger. And a problem with Chris Paul right now is that his stuff is lingering into multiple seasons. And if you look at the landscape of injuries, you have to take your time and take care of your body. Going out there playing hurt is not the answer most of the time. Like, guys go out there and guys have injuries or not 100%, but there's some stuff that can linger and affect what he's really judged upon, and that is the playoffs. You judge LeBron James not on his regular seasons, what seed he gets. You judge him on what his production in the playoffs and if he brings you a championship. And if this is something that could stop that, then I got to look at to it and make sure that I'm 100%, because me being 100% have to be 100% in March and April.
I echo that. And LeBron James, if he has the power, he doesn't have to take the extra time to use that same power. He can just say, look, this is what I want. You guys going to give it to me. If he has that power. If he doesn't, then this won't work either, because you don't have the power.
Oh, so this is more powerful than him saying anything.
Just sitting out and watch it?
Far more powerful.
For a 35-win team in contrast, I don't think it really lands where he wants it to. It's a 35-win team.
Teams always say that you're healthy when you are the judge of your health. Your doctor's going to say you should be okay, but I know when I feel bad. You know I know when my body's not right. Yeah. And if I'm not right, I can't go and be me. And if you go out then LeBron James, he's 75% and he's not doing what he's supposed to, what we're going to be talking about, smoking. LeBron James doesn't have it anymore.
Yeah.
And he can't get it done. And he's not doing what he's supposed to in Los Angeles. So I got to be able to do my full job. And I respect that as a man, to be able to say, you know what, I'm not ready. I'll do it. I'll do it when I can. And I'm going to try to do it at the best level rather than just give you a half.
You've made excellent points, but I stand by my opinion.
And you always will.
He heard a pop of it.
I heard it.
All right, welcome back to the show with Locke and Wiley. Mark Schlereth and TJ Houshmandzadeh. Time for my favorite segment, Antisocial. We moved it up a little bit, earlier.
All right.
Darnell couldn't wait. I think Darnell's got a doctor's appointment later.
In the weight room.
Yes, sir.
Squad goals.
Darnell Smith, our social media manager, here to tell us what's happening in the social media world. Darnell, what's popping?
Yeah, starting off in the NFL, where Bears kicker Cody Parkey went on the Today Show and talked about his double doink missed field goal against the Eagles during Wild Card Weekend. Bears fans made it known on Twitter that they were pissed and thought he was being selfish. Even Bears head coach Matt Nagy said,
In our locker room, we talk about a we thing, and that was more of a me thing. Ooh. Do you guys have a problem with Parkey going on the Today Show?
I really don't. I don't get this controversy at all. You know, I don't think he was making excuses or anything. I don't get the controversy. I don't see why it's a big deal.
I think maybe the city of Chicago, Bears fans, maybe trying to avoid a Steve Bartman situation because you know how he got put out there and ostracized. I don't have a problem at all. Anybody who's reminding the world that life is bigger than football, than games, than sports, don't condemn the dude. He went through hell and he's paying for it. I'm glad he's addressed
it. A wee thing is, are they a wee thing? They're going to fire him, right? I mean, like,
they ain't firing
they ain't firing the other 53. They're going to fire him. I mean, that's, he doinked, what, that was the 6-1 he doinked off the upright?
Yeah. That's,
it's not like he's going to be working there, so why do they care if he goes on national television?
I don't have a problem with it either. It's, technically, he didn't miss it. That field goal was blocked.
Oh.
So technically, he didn't miss the field goal. It was blocked. Do I have a problem with it? No, he owned up to it after the game. He said it was his fault. We know that. Whew. He will no longer be a Chicago Bear next season. We know that as well. So he's getting his face out there.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, moving on to a trending topic on Instagram that y'all know I had to get in on. Everybody, don't judge me.
Look, what year was that?
On the line. 07, 08.
Oh, Lord.
Everybody been participating in this 10-year challenge, posting pictures of themselves from 09 to now. Even our guy Marcel decided to join in on the challenge, posting this picture of him in his 5XL pink polo in a pair of Whitlock's jeans. Marcellus, are you disappointed that these jeans went out of style?
Man, hell yeah. I'm disappointed we can't see the jeans right now. Yeah. We don't get damn jeans. Got to be all up top. Oh, that was a mess. Everybody's doing the challenge, and everybody's showing their worst picture from then and their best from now to show that they're not aging. I wanted to flip it a little bit, like show something that's
the best. Was them jeans Ivizu? You remember those?
Lord, I thought I was winning back then, but boy, I look a mess. Ooh. And I don't know what size that shirt
is. I'm sorry, can we go back to the picture, Darnell?
Yeah, please.
Can we go back to the picture, Darnell, because I got some questions here about.
Don't pull it up, y'all.
Pull it up.
I want to make.
Can we pull it up? Yeah. I want to try. The size of Darnell's head, only Barry Bonds is the only guy I've seen go from a small head to a big head.
What you saying?
What
drugs? Hey, Darnell, in all seriousness, the fad is called CrossFit, not CrossFat.
Come on. You an old lineman. You want to stick together.
Woo! He's smoking out there. For real, Darnell. Hey, Darnell, you owe Whitlock a lot. Because I'm just, man, you look broke and hungry.
Darnell, I'm from the east side.
Darnell,
you look good, bro. You look good.
My God. I don't know. Have you started lifting weights?
You look good, man. Not really. I ain't started. Y'all was running around a little bit, but I ain't lifting. You look good, bro. You all right.
A mess.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yes, moving on to college football, the Clemson Tigers, fresh off their victory over Alabama in the national championship game, arrived at the White House yesterday for a visit with President Trump. The team was served a variety of fast food, including Wendy's, McDonald's, and Burger King, which the White House said President Trump paid for out of his own pocket. Now, don't get me wrong, I definitely would have thrown this down, but Twitter was a little skeptical of the spread. Are y'all okay with it, though?
Listen, at the age of 21, 22, if I walked into a room with Wendy's, McDonald's, and Burger King and pizza, I'm happy.
Man, that's collegiate heaven. I mean, and every time you go to a football game in college, you see the kids excited. Chick-fil-A, excited. In-N-Out. Oh, man, fast.
What'd you just say, though?
What? Those are not. You don't like McDonald's?
Chick-fil-A.
You don't like McDonald's?
In-N-Out.
You don't like McDonald's?
I can't remember the last time I had McDonald's.
You missing out. Man, the filet of
fish. Un-American right here.
My kids eat it. I don't.
Dude, you can't get a ribeye or a steak up in that? Like, you got to eat a...
Y'all boo.
Chipotle? Chipotle, Chick-fil-A, In-N-Out, Five Guys at least?
I'm going, like, wait a minute. I'm going to the White House, and I'm going to get the same thing I get at the Student Union building?
Seriously.
Hey, man, the government shut down. Y'all got to relax.
Y'all don't quit knocking McDonald's and that double filet of fish sandwich.
Let them know.
They had the Big Mac.
Man, that 23 nugget with barbecue sauce.
Yeah, they
nothing wrong with that, man.
All right, what's next, Darnell?
All right, man, sticking with Clemson at the White House, a picture making fun of one of their players surfaced on Twitter with the caption, NCAA made billions off me, and all I got was CTE and a Big Mac.
Well, exactly.
The player from the picture, Matt Bockhorst, decided to clap back saying, and a scholarship, a stipend, an education, a head coach that cares, and last but not least, a national championship ring. Y'all like his response to the haters here?
Love it.
Yeah. Somebody got at him, huh?
Yeah.
I love it. Now, look, do I think college players should be paid for the high-profile ones? Yes. But for the majority of the college players like me, it works out just great.
Yeah. I mean, I love his response, but the hit dog hollers. And he did have to respond. He had to clap back because, I mean, for all the other guys, 99% of those guys in that room, well, maybe it's Clemson, so 95% of those guys in that room, that's all they're going to get out of it, man, whatever those relationships are and what they can build off a connection, which is amazing. But, yeah, that's
college is the best time of your life.
No, it ain't.
Yeah, it is.
Boy, you see that picture of me with that Ferrari? That was the best time of my
life.
That's
before you got all that money.
Wasn't college. No, hey.
For 95% of them, okay, the best time of your life.
Man, I'm telling you what, regardless, football's given me so much more than it is taken from me.
Yes.
And my best friends in the entire world are still the guys I went to the University of Idaho with, bar none.
Clearly, that's the case for me. Mm. I text with my guys from Ball State every day. I wouldn't be here without playing football at Ball State, and I never got a whiff of the NFL. Mm. It's a great exchange.
There it is. Kumbaya. All
right. We in a group text. They talking about doing a 30 for 30 on Oregon State.
Yeah. Just that got a will text be lowly message. Rated.
You crazy. You crazy.
You and what? You and Chad?
Oh, my. You going to disrespect us?
Wait, wait.
No, I'm
Hey, Danny was there?
Erickson, me, Oregon. Chad, Nick Barnett, Dwan Edwards, we all played over 10 years in the league. That's just four guys from one team.
Well, you know, if we had somebody from the U here, they'd run off a list of Hall of Fame.
No.
You better not have a good counter program.
That's different.
I'm on Netflix.
That's different.
Okay. They already made two on them. You're just trying to get a footnote on one.
All right, Darnell, last but not least.
Yesterday on the Herman, I got Kyle talking about the Patriots being vulnerable. Take a listen.
Nobody want to watch that.
If New England goes to Kansas City and wins this weekend, AFC wave the white flag. I mean, this is the most vulnerable they're ever going to be.
Y'all agree with Colin here?
No. Everybody said this last year when the big report came out and all the schism and the issues, that's the most vulnerable they'll be. There's fraction in the New England dynasty. Now this year, they're most vulnerable. You know what? I don't think they care about vulnerability. They're just going to go out there and continue to roll, man.
Yeah, I don't see the Patriots being vulnerable until Brady retires and Belichick leaves.
Preach, brother.
That's when they'll be most vulnerable. Right now, they still got the GOAT of quarterbacks and coaches. How are they vulnerable?
I'm with you. When 12 is not taking snaps, that's when, as long as 12 is back there, they always got a chance.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going for the Chiefs this week for sure. But
put that down.
With Tom Brady back there, they always got a chance.
I think the thing that sets them apart is every year they lose games early. They lost some late this year. But they do a better job than anybody in my mind in the NFL is developing players over the course of the season, where some of their players at the beginning of the year, they're whatever. At the end of the year, they're actually really good football players. And
coaching.
That's a testament to coaching.
One
coaching.
More question. Seriously, anybody interested in that Oregon State documentary coming out?
This guy here, man. This guy here.
Hey, I'm going to watch it, TJ.
Somebody interested in it. I just got a call about it.
Let me say this. If Oregon State gets one, they might as well do one on Ball State.
Let it go.
Now, that's a fact.
Hey, I'll give you that. Hey.
I'm more famous than any of these Oregon State players.
Hey. Hey, no.
Take that. Shot fire.
Hey, 27 losing seasons in a row to a BCS game. Come on, man. Right,
thank you, Darnell. Coming
come
up
on, man. Y'all hating.
Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, joined by Mark Schlereth and TJ Houshmandzadeh. Let's move to the NFL draft, which just added a very high-profile prospect, Heisman Trophy winner Kyler Murray. The former Oklahoma quarterback made the announcement yesterday. Despite already being drafted in the first round to play baseball by the Oakland A's, Murray can still negotiate with the A's if he wants to pursue a career in baseball, and there are still big questions about the undersized Murray and how he would adjust to the NFL game. I think this is a brilliant negotiating ploy by Scott Boras, his baseball agent.
Okay.
I don't see Kyler Murray as a serious NFL prospect. He's a tremendous college quarterback, 5'8". I'm just 5'9". I just can't pull. If I'm an NFL team, I can't pull the trigger. I think that's a whole 5'9" is a completely different ball game than Russell Wilson or Baker Mayfield. is this kid better than Doug Flutie? And Doug Flutie had an okay NFL career.
Not his fault.
Solid NFL career.
A little better.
I think he's negotiating with baseball for a better baseball contract, and I think that's his best sport.
I play with Flutie Flakes. It's not a problem in terms of your height. Look, I will say this. There's limitations at times. Drew Brees still has limitations at times. You bring pressure up the middle, Drew Brees in the passing lanes, not as effective. So we get that. But 5'8 to 5'10, 5'11, obviously you'd rather be taller, but you can still play the game of football. I played with Doug Flutie when he won 10 games, Pro Bowl, and the playoffs, and he performed well. Now, that said, boy, I would love for that to be my son in that position, to have these two options, these two opportunities. I would tell him, look, here's the pros and cons in both situations. However, I would root for him to go to football because you can always fall down to baseball. Tim Tebow, who didn't play baseball since high school, is damn near a pro. If he wasn't injured last year, he probably would be a pro right now, be a Met. So the athleticism in baseball, we all know, is a little less than it takes to play the game of football. In your prime years, in the years where they're still trying to get you and put their claws on you in the football world, take that opportunity. If that doesn't work, fall down to baseball.
Well, I think that playing Major League Baseball is a lot harder than playing professional football. It's a lot harder to get in. And the statistic would bear that out. I mean, one, you're playing against the world. You're not doing that here in America playing football. There's 53 guys on a roster. There's 25 active guys on a Major League Baseball roster. You sign this deal in baseball, you're going to spend the next 3-4 years riding around a bus in the minor leagues. Then when you get in to professional baseball, after you get to the majors, you've got 3 years of Major League service without going down. You can't be sent down to the minors. That the clock starts ticking. If you get sent down, it's no longer ticking.
It goes back.
So you've got 3 years to be able to get to your arbitration year. And then if you're not a superstar in your arbitration year, you've got 1 year of money that you're going to make, and then you hit free agency. So you're going to be 7 years essentially out before you have a chance to sign a contract after this signing bonus. You have two contracts in the NFL. Maybe you're working on your third contract in the NFL. He's going to be a first-round draft choice, and he's rated in the bottom in the 20s. But that means you're going to get elevated up into the teens at the very least in the National Football League. You're going to make not 15. You're probably going to make 20-some million dollars just to sign your name on a contract, and you're going to get another opportunity 4 years from now to re-sign a deal. I mean, it's a 4-year deal with the option of the team. If you play well, you're going to get an option. You're going to get that option contract in 4 years.
Well, if he's a first rounder,
I'm playing football, and I've thought about this. I've kind of looked into it. It's what you said. He could possibly be 29, 30 years old before he's a free agent in baseball. If he's in the minors for 2 or 3 years and they have the arbitration system in baseball, look at Bryce Harper and Manny Machado. They can't even get a 10-year deal, and they're the best players in baseball. Before he's up for his second contract in baseball, he could possibly make, what you said, at least $30 million playing football. If he's a good player, he doesn't have to be great. He'll sign at that time for $21, $22, maybe $23 million a year as a quarterback.
Yeah.
And he's a star. He won the Heisman Trophy. He's a star in football. He goes and plays baseball, bus trip in the minors. He's not a star anymore. You're
no
just marketing one of the guys.
There.
No
yep.
mark. So for me, go play football. If it doesn't pan out, all right, I'll go try baseball again. That's what I would do.
Oh, I can't decide if Colin Kaepernick is a world-class Twitter troll or a world-class attention whore. I go back and forth. I know what he's not. He's not a serious activist fighting for racial equality. He's not the modern-day Muhammad Ali. He's not even a poor man's Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. Ali and Rauf had real beliefs backed by religious conviction. Kaepernick just wants to be famous. That's the only explanation for the controversy he and his girlfriend Nessa are stirring around the NFL Super Bowl halftime performance. Rappers Travis Scott and Big Boy are being vilified by the Bonnie and Clyde of social justice warrioring for agreeing to perform at Super Bowl 53. Earlier this week, Variety reported that Scott consulted with Muhammad Ali, I'm sorry, Kaepernick, before agreeing to shout mostly inaudible words into a microphone during halftime of America's biggest television show / sporting event. Well, now today, TMZ has unearthed indisputable Twitter evidence that Cap doesn't approve of Scott's performance. Cap retweeted a New York radio host who tweeted, "Cap did not approve of this bull bleep. Get the bleep out of here." Nessa also retweeted the radio host, but unlike her highly reluctant to speak boyfriend, Nessa added words to her retweet. Facts, they need to stop lying. TMZ also reported Nessa's earlier tweet, which labeled Big Boy a sellout for performing. She added, "If you're with them, you definitely are not with us." Let's take a step back and examine the childishness and the absurdity of the whole thing. Remember when you were in grade school and you passed notes rather than tell someone what you really think? That's what all this tweeting and retweeting is. Kaepernick doesn't have the courage to stand up and speak like a man or woman. He retweets or lets Nessa or the Kaepernicks talk for him. Why not hold a press conference and explain publicly to everyone how Travis Scott's halftime performance will harm black people? I also want you to consider that Cap and Nessa have elected themselves as the arbiters for black racial loyalty. Nessa's Egyptian. She's not black. Cap, as you know, is mixed race and was raised by the very lovely all-white Kaepernick family. Somehow we've allowed this unmarried, 75% not black power couple to masquerade as the new millennial Martin and Coretta or Malcolm and Betty Shabazz. They get to call Big Boy a sellout and shame Travis Scott for doing exactly what Kaepernick wishes he was doing in 2 weeks, playing in the Super Bowl. Can we stop this? Does Cap realize on Super Bowl Sunday all the players will be wearing Nike uniforms? Has Cap asked Nike to not provide uniforms for the Super Bowl? Can we get a detailed list of who does and doesn't get to participate in the Super Bowl? Should the black players on each team boycott the Super Bowl? Colin Kaepernick has been throwing a tantrum from the moment San Francisco gave his job to Blaine Gabbert. He's mad NFL ratings have recovered from his first publicity stunt. He now wants to damage a couple of black rappers with his latest Hey Look at Me stunt. This is the behavior of a spoiled child, not a freedom fighter. Joining the desk now are Fox NFL analysts Mark Schlereth and James Harrison. Marcellus, I'll start with you. This is all about attention. I've said it from day one, 3 years ago when this started, and I say it again today. This guy just wants to be famous. This has nothing to do with any sort of cause.
I agree with your essay, damn near wholeheartedly. And I'm reluctant to be in that place because we all know that there's a cause that Kaepernick is standing for or kneeling for. And then there's a career that has been lost in part because of what Kaepernick did to himself and what others have done to Kaepernick in reaction to NFL owners. So I have to separate the cause from his career. And once I do that, and your essay eloquently puts you in that place to realize Kaepernick is now turning into a comedy of errors. And it's really a mishandling of the cause, because you could be for the cause, Kaepernick, Nessa, but I'm from the cause. You know, I'm from what we're talking about, the social injustice. And it's not a badge of honor I walk around with to show everyone that, look, I'm from it. But I've been through it, man, and I know what it looks like when it's real, when it's authentic. And I think what happened was not your essay. It was to imply, to tell Big Boy from Outkast to even have it in reference that he's a sellout, that cuts deep. That's Daddy Fat Sacks. The one that rides the Cadillacs, stays down for the streets because the streets is where his folks at, better know that. Some say pro-black, he says professional. People don't understand it. Outkast 10, 15 years ago saw this coming. And you look at them and they're one of the reasons why we have so many different contexts of culture, so many different complexions of culture, so many different varieties of culture. And now Kaepernick and Nessa wants it to be monolithic. Check in with Kaepernick to do what? That's your career choice, and that's what you're going through. And we're going to separate that from the plight and the cause. Because Travis Scott, don't check in with him. And Travis Scott even said that. I don't have to check in with Cap. And Big Boy certainly doesn't have to check in with Cap. If Big Boy's a sellout, and if Nessa wants to say that if you're not with us, you're against us, if you want to have that childlike behavior, you draw the line, I'm not going to stand on the side with you. If you're going to point at Big Boy from Outkast, and you're going to point at others who are not expressing it the same exact way as you are, and now damn them, the damn me, because I am not for this. I'm for the cause, because I'm from the cause, and I wish that they would get their understandings in alignment with the cause.
Yeah, definitely. I don't feel like he should be saying anything. I don't see how you could tell another grown man exactly what it is that he should do or how he should approach a situation. You know, he did what he did. He made a deal where they would donate a certain amount of money to causes for that, and to sit back and make like he has to ask permission or get your permission, you know. I haven't had to ask permission since, you know, I was 18 years old, and you know, my daddy, he's gone, and my mom, she's still around, but even to this day, I'm a grown man. She'll give me advice, but at the end of the day, I don't have to get her permission to do anything. So for you to be a stranger and to tell another grown man that, you know, he needs to be able to come to you and have you assert what he's doing and say, hey, it's cool for you to do that, it makes no sense to me. Like, this whole era of everybody believing they're bigger than what they are or they want to be more than what they are, it's ridiculous.
You know, I think one of the things, and one of the things I loved about being in a locker room my whole life, is we could break down barriers and we could break down the issues of race and the issues of religion and the issues of politics and just care about one another and just play for one another. And ultimately, there are a lot of people in this world that are doing a lot of good. There's a lot of NFL players that are doing a lot of good in the realm of social injustice, of being in the communities and working and doing that. This, to me, seems to be just a dividing factor. Let's continue. Let's, within the cause of social injustice, let's divide that cause. Like, that's not bringing people together.
No.
That's dividing people even further. And that's, for me, the disappointing part of watching this whole thing play out. You know, I look at what's happened to him, and do I think he's better than some of the guys in the National Football League? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Do I think he'll humble himself enough to say, yeah, I'll take a backup, I'll do what RG3 did in Baltimore and say, I'll mentor a young guy like Lamar Jackson and I'll work to get my career back? Like, are you willing to do that? I'll take it a step further. Are you like Tim Tebow, who's had multiple jobs and multiple offers to change positions, or to go to the Canadian Football League and say, no, I just wanted to be a quarterback, so now I'm going to be a baseball player? Like, what are you willing to do to get your career back? Are you willing to go to be a backup to the point where you no longer have the
– go to Canada like myself.
Right, where you don't have the platform anymore? Because being a backup quarterback in the National Football League doesn't give you the platform to be the spokesperson that you are right now. So I would just say I don't like the division – within what's going on here, and it just feels like, you know, as a country, we are such a divided people right now. And I've always said the thing about the locker room, our strengths are our differences. That's what makes us great. Just, I mean, as football players, as people, like the greatest strength we have as people is the fact that we are wonderfully created, made in the image of God, and we're all different. God, could you imagine how unbelievably boring life would be if we were all the same and we were all gifted with the same with the same things?
Yeah, that leads me back to the whole situation with the kneeling, and you know, where the Steelers, you know, we had our situation in Chicago where we were trying to decide what we wanted to do, you know. And you know, we decided that we couldn't kneel because we had a guy in there that was Alejandro Villanueva, and he served time in the military. And Al was like, you know what? I've sat there with 18, 19-year-old men who believed in everything that flag stood for, and they died for that. And he was like, for me to go out there, I understand what you're representing as far as trying to make it aware of social injustice. He was like, but I can't do it because of that. He was like, guys, I sat there and held guys and watched them die. And we understood, like, okay, he can't kneel. All right. It was, you know, maybe a few guys that wanted to kneel. So we're like, this is what we're going to do. We're just going to stay inside, and we're going to remove ourselves from the situation. I mean, it didn't work out that way, but that's, you know, what the agreement had came down to.
I just wish that Kaepernick or Kaepernick supporters, but primarily just Kaepernick, explain to me why the Super Bowl is being set up as the line in the sand, and why halftime at Super Bowl is the line in the sand. That
how many people watch it?
But no, that's I get it. But again, people watch the game, and so that's what makes me say this is just a publicity stunt. Because show me how whatever transpires at halftime, how does it stop the oppression you're talking about, the injustice you're talking about? How does it make one black child born into poverty or even born into what? How does it improve their life if Travis Scott or Big Boy don't perform or if there's some sort of controversy around halftime of the Super Bowl? How does that move the cause forward? The only cause that moves forward is Kaepernick's cause. And I got this is where I've been from day one. And Nessa, to me, her one of her tweets answers every question for me. She said, there is no mutual respect and there is no understanding for anyone working against Colin Kaepernick, period. And again, she didn't say there's no mutual understanding, there's no understanding for anyone working against the cause of black empowerment. Mm. It's Kaepernick. Mm. Again, that's what I've been saying from word go. This has always been about Kaepernick, not the cause. This is in her own words.
Yeah, that really offended me. Really offended me. I mean, highly miscalculated tweet to now align in full marriage Kaepernick with the cause. When there are so many other soldiers out there, including Big Boy, including Travis Scott, $500,000 donated.
Yes.
Just for going to the Super Bowl. We don't have to all do it the same way to get it done. Ultimate team sport.
Right. Isn't that what makes it, isn't that what it's beautiful though?
That's
is everybody's
crazy.
everybody's doing something different. You know, those the guys who are involved, the people who are involved are doing it the way that they're comfortable doing it. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So basically, if you're not with Kaepernick and you don't do it his way,
this
could go a lot of places. So if you don't kneel, are you
a sellout? You got to be. If you're not doing it his way, you got to be.
Bring it, then.
According to what she just tweeted right there.
If you're not with them, you're against them. You have no mutual respect. Like, enlighten black people. Nuanced black people who are not sitting there at extremes and trying to be so polarizing but really trying to be effective is laughing at this. That loud minority on Twitter, online, that is getting you gassed up and drunk on your power, you need to calm down. And really, first of all, when you from it, the voiceless, the powerless, growing up and seeing it like that, trust me, man, we need effective resources to come back here. We don't need your hype and retweets and likes and clicks. That may be part of your ammunition to get your platform to a greater place, but now there's a greater responsibility. And I'm not seeing that. When I see you take shot at other soldiers in the same fight as you, that friendly fire, it doesn't land lightly.
Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. We're joined now by NBA champion Dante Jones.
Yeah.
Let's move to the NBA, where the Warriors put on a show last night with a record-setting 51 points in the first quarter of what turned into a 142-111 rout of the Nuggets. The Warriors took over first place in the West with the win. Afterwards, Kevin Durant was asked if the Golden State was making a statement, and he said, quote, no, I think they know who we are.
I do think
he was making a statement, and the statement was, we can flip this switch whenever we want to, and we will flip this switch when we want to, and I can't argue with him right now. Mm. They flipped the switch.
He's right. KD's right. That's a level of gangsterism right there. Like, I ain't making no statement.
Gangsterism?
Gangsterism. he statements are for people you don't know about. You know who we are, Don Dottas, baby. We going for three in a row. Right. And that is amazing that he has that kind of Jedi mind skill over other teams, other opponents. But here's the real of it. If you look at what the Golden State Warriors did, they intentionally poured it on thick on the Nuggets, who were the number one seed. They basically wanted you to know no one should gain confidence, even in regular season moments. Like, we really needed to see Kenan Ivory Wayans just pop up and say, message. And that's what that was, a message. Not so much statement like, oh, we've arrived or hit the switch. Just remind y'all who's the best, and they are.
It was their first opportunity to hunt, and that's good for them in their season right now. They got a chance to go against the number one seed and show their dominance. They are the favorite to win the championship by far. Now, they've shown some chinks in their armor along during the season, and they still have some things to figure out with Boogie Cousins coming back. Right. But they are the most dominant team in basketball right now, and they showed it last night, and they got a chance to get excited for a game finally within this season. And that's what it's about. That's the best part about the NBA.
The thing you said that's interesting is Boogie will be back, I think, Friday.
Changes everything.
But that's not good.
In a good way or bad?
Changes everything. It just changes. Like, Boogie is used to having the ball in his hands. Boogie's not a facilitator. Boogie's a scorer. He's a rebounder. He is not – his deficiencies were his pick-and-roll defense and his ability to guard at the basket, and that's something that they need, and they're one of the best switching teams. And can he switch and guard the ball – coming back from injury. So he changes changes how they spread the ball out and how they get him touches. They have to get him touches because he demands touches because his talent level demands touches.
Good changes or bad changes?
We don't know. It's all up in the air. It could be good. It could be bad. I don't see Boogie, who's trying to get a max contract, going in there just feeding other people and trying to get them set up because then his numbers won't satisfy the criteria to get a max. So what coming kind of Boogie injury are we going to get coming off injury? So we don't know. We just don't know.
Boogie's
I don't think it's
gonna
bad.
Get his money regardless.
Yeah. No. You thought that last – offseason, Boogie was going to get his money regardless. Ooh. And he had no suitors, and he had to take a little bit of humble pie and go find the right team for him. So it's not a definite because they're young teams with cap space. And you got to find the right dynamic for Boogie. Like, it's not a just throw it up. He's not LeBron James. He's not Paul George. Mm. He's not Russell Westbrook. He's not everybody's going to give them the max.
Wow. Well, the doubters is singular. And
no, because he hasn't won yet. Like, what? Why am I giving you money? Have you shown winning yet? That's what you give the money for.
No, I get
winning.
That. Yeah. My mind's blown now because I was on the high from what I saw from Golden State just resetting the landscape. And now
I don't think Boogie can mess up what we saw last night.
There's no way he can mess up that floor.
I really don't because. They'll just sit him back down.
I'm not saying he's going to mess it
up. They'll just sit him down.
Don't get it twisted. And, yeah, are they going to sit him down? Are they going to deal with the unhappy Boogie? Is Boogie going to go out? Draymond Green is great to me because he'll go out there and have 0 points, 10 rebounds. He'll be happy with 8 assists and be like, you know what, I dominated the game on the defensive end, and that's how I got it. That's not how Boogie judges himself, and that's not how he's been doing it throughout his career. So we don't know what he's going to give.
We need to be patient because
Boogie
comes back on Friday against the Clippers. We know that's not going to go well. So after they play the Clippers, then we can judge this because it's going to be horrible.
Let's move to Dallas, where Jerry Jones has already made it clear he's committed to Jason Garrett for the foreseeable future, but might be looking to shake things up elsewhere. Earlier in the week, Garrett walked back his claim that offensive coordinator Scott Linehan would definitely be back. And now it sounds like Jerry is keeping his options open, saying, quote, you've got to look at what your alternative is. I'm pro the Cowboys tweaking their coaching staff, and particularly their offensive coaching staff, because I thought Dak made some progress the second half of the season, but not enough for me to stay committed. I just think they can do better than Scott Linehan. I think they can diversify this offense even more. I'm like Jerry. I think Jerry has his eye on someone that he thinks may pop open. And so they need to keep their options open and make that move if it's available.
I like the consistency. I like them keeping this coaching staff one more year. Give me Amari Cooper in a training camp. Let me get an entire offseason with him. Look at the numbers, the before and after, in terms of points per game. They improved. Total offense, pass, rush, third down percentage, really. They went to fourth in the NFL all the way from 29th before Amari Cooper got there. Dak Prescott did improve. They were 8-3 once Amari Cooper was on the roster. Everything improved offensively. And that was in the abbreviated season. So I said, give me Amari Cooper in offseason. Let's see what we do.
Yeah, I would say keep it the same. I think, now, understand that Scott Linehan and I were teammates at the University of Idaho, so I'm a little bit biased in my breakdown here. But Dak Prescott, second best season he's ever had completion percentage, second best season he's ever had 22 touchdowns, second best he's ever had passer rating. Here's what I would say. What you have to understand is Dak Prescott's strengths coming into his career were really about his physicality, his ability to run, his ability to do the zone read stuff and get on the edge. Now the prime of your quarterbacking career starts after you're 32.
You won't get to 32 if you allow him to play like this. So I think this is mostly by design. You're asking your coordinator to grow a quarterback whose primary skill coming out of college was his physical attributes, not his football kind of passing acumen. So I think this is part and parcel of what you're trying to do, because think about what's going on in Carolina right now. We have seen one of the greatest athletes of our time in Cam Newton, 29 years old. Dave Tepper, their owner, has talked about him sitting out next season, the 2019 season, because his body is so beat to a pulp. Yeah. You cannot survive. It's not a long-term survival when you play quarterback that way. So I think this is by design, by that coaching staff, by Jerry Jones, getting him to his prime. Your prime doesn't start as a quarterback anymore until you're 32 years old. You used to be walking out of the league at that time. It's the way the game is designed now. So I say keep the staff the way it is.
Yeah, I agree. Well, being America's team, they're under a lot of pressure. It's just how it is. You don't know this unless you're a cowboy, you know, looking from the outside in. Is it the coordinator or does Dat have enough icing? You know, he has the cake, but he has enough icing to make this thing happen and go all the way. So, you know, that's yet to be seen. But they have potentially to do great things on offense, obviously with the line and the way Zeke Elliott runs the ball. But for me personally, maybe Dat needs to get a little bit better or change up the coordinator job. But at the same time, if you keep them all together, the longer they are together, the better they will be later on.
DJ's point to me about Dak needs to get a little bit better, and I think that's what Jerry, why he's still like, I'm not so sure. Jason Garrett and these guys have a stare. Oh, we think we did great. We went 8-3 once we got Amari this, Amari that, if we have Amari. And Jerry's sitting back saying, this ain't good enough. I put together a team that I don't believe, he, in his mind, shouldn't have gotten embarrassed by the Los Angeles Rams.
But that wasn't Dak's fault. I mean, that game, the reason they're in Cabo right now is not on Dak. It's that defense. And look, if you want to improve Dak Prescott, it's going to happen two ways. One, he continues to improve in the offseason and do his thing in terms of mechanics, relationship with Amari Cooper. Two, this draft, draft a receiver. Like, I mean, look, I love the draft, the last couple of drafts for the Dallas Cowboys, but it's time to stop playing. DK Metcalf, Ole Miss, 6'4", 230, number one receiver. Some say he's going to go mid, late 20s. Please, somebody, A.J. Brown, somebody get him another number one receiver to put everyone in their proper position. Too long they were going with Cole Beasley as their downfield threat. Nice. And then we're indicting Dak Prescott, who I say needs to get better, but give him more to work with.
I would also say, you know, you want to look at the coaching staff, and their defense was pretty phenomenal this year, but you get into a game against the Rams where the Rams base everything out of a wide zone. They're 18-19 handoff, 18-19 pitch, 18-19 toss. That's what they base out of. And then you're going to try to run games and run blitzes against a zone team. You will get gashed 100% of the time. And the fact that you didn't change that up and you gave up almost 300 yards rushing, you can't do that against a zone team. So we're sitting here talking about the offensive coaching changes. Mm. How did you not look at that and say, man, I mean, that's what the Rams are. The Rams go right back to the Mike Shanahan late 90s teams that I was on. They're 18-19 wide handoff. They're 18-19 zone. That's what they run.
But wasn't that thrown off when C.J. Anderson comes out there and he's bowling ball down the A-gaps? So right. It's not so
it's
much
all zone. It's press. Back in the A-gaps. The 18-19 stuff, that to me, the wide zone stuff is all about getting back behind the center. Mm. It's getting people to run further than they want, cutting off the backside, getting them on the ground, and then getting back in that A-gap. And
the Cowboys needed to get more the safety in the box. They had two high safeties trying to, you know, make sure they stop.
And then they're trying to run games by pinch and loop. And
well, you have to run games. We got two high safety because you got to take got to compensate for not that extra guy in the box. But get that. Run cover three, cover one, get that safety down there. Because after first half, you know what it is. You know what the slow lead is.
Whitlock and Wiley, we're joined now by NBA champion Dante Jones. Let's move to the NBA where Kyrie Irving, who had a big game last night, dropping 27 points and 18 assists, and a win over Toronto. Kyrie made waves last week after getting into it with Brad Stevens and Gordon Hayward during a loss in Orlando, and yesterday admitted the incident inspired him to reach out to a guy he used to have friction with, LeBron James.
It was a big deal for me because I had to call Bron, you know, and tell him, like, you know, I apologize for being that young player that wanted to everything at his, you know, at his fingertips, and I wanted everything to be at, you know, my threshold. I wanted to be the guy that led us to championship. I wanted to be the leader. I wanted to be all that, and, you know, the responsibility of being the best player in the world and leading a team is something that's not meant for many people. And Bron was one of those guys that came to Cleveland and tried to really show us what it's like to win a championship, and it was hard for him. And sometimes getting the most out of the group, it's not the easiest thing in the world.
The question is, do we think that's an indication Kyrie regrets leaving LeBron's side? I'm not going to go first. I'm going to let y'all go first.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't think he regrets leaving LeBron. I think he regrets how he responded to LeBron in that moment. But those are two different things. I think he's now owning up to the fact that, God, I mean, Kyrie's 26 right now. Like, LeBron James comes into your building and you're 23. I mean, we have to respect in our maturation that we walk, we jog, we run. And even when you're running as a leader, there's still gears to shift to go even faster, be even better as that same leader. He's just hitting a different gear right now. And respect for him for exercising that demon that was the regret of how I responded to you, LeBron, and calling LeBron himself personally and taking all that fire back. Respect for him for doing that.
Okay, first of all, he's 22, and
22, even younger.
We're 21 and 22. The decisions that we made in life, some of those we wish we could get back. Mm-hmm. Now, I appreciate the opportunity for you to let us go first because it's going to be rare in life. We might not get it back. But I equate that to the growing pains of leadership. And he was going through a tough time. He saw how he reacted on TV. He knew it was wrong. He looked in the mirror and said, you know, I'm wrong for this. But when he started looking in the mirror, he was like, you know what? That was me. And that's the things that I did. And I equate that to he was always going to regret it. I knew he was always going to regret it. Two great people. It wasn't that he wasn't a good person and a good kid. Mm. It was just the fact that he was given so much at that point in time. He was an all-star. He had his own shoe. He thought he had figured it out. He was on his way. No, I'm talking about before that. Oh. When he was trying to get these lessons from LeBron, he was so resistant because he thought he had this thing figured out. And LeBron had a little patience with him, was like, listen, some things that I can give you, but you have to listen and take it. And that's what their friction was. I always knew he was going to regret it, but I thought it was going to be later in his career when he understood, kind of like as parents with our kids. Mm. Our parents yelled at us and told us we couldn't have these things, and we don't sit back and understand those things until we have kids and we look at them and tell them these things, understood why our parents was taking these things away from us. Yeah. And it's awesome that he can admit that right now and give thanks and go ahead and apologize, because that shows his growth and his maturity.
Let's be sure it's regret and not a shot at his young teammates in Boston. Hmm. What if he's really trying to say it's really more of a message to them? It's a way of saying these kids are acting the way that I did when I was in Cleveland, and now I'm the best player here, and these guys won't follow my leadership the way I wouldn't follow LeBron's. What if it's not regret, it's more of a message to his current teammates?
It's a message, but it's a message that I have to step up and be more responsible. He's not putting all the blame on them. He's saying, you know what, I have to be what Bron was for me. And that was on the daily be responsible for my teammates, on the daily be responsible for my actions, on the daily bring it, on the daily lead. Mm. That consistent level of leadership is what he's speaking to.
Let me scoot over here next to Whitlock. You got me thinking over here. And you know, one of the things about clout chasing, and I'm not saying Kyrie needs to clout chase LeBron, but in that matchup, LeBron got more clout. You get in a conversation that is of higher status. It's a higher magnitude. So now Kyrie is putting himself in a LeBron discussion in terms of leadership, right or wrong, who's a better leader? We know that answer. But he's in that discussion, separating himself from the players he just dissed. Why are you going on record talking about you talk to LeBron as a leader to say, this is how I learned how to deal with you? They've been saying, keep it in-house. They've been saying, don't criticize us to the media. And now your apology and the credit is going out to the media. If I were that other player, Jaylen Brown especially, I'm sitting there like, bruh, you saying a lot to them, and we need to hear more to us, wouldn't you?
Well, yes, he's speaking to the media, but he also embarrassed them to the media as well. So it's kind of like you have to give your apology to them in private and in public, because you did your actions spoke a thousand words that you really can't take back
little
unless
you
give it to him.
A little suspicious, like just a little reasonable doubt. Like
I'm not because he's putting them in a perspective of a mistake that he made, and he's giving you a storyline, right. Not just the words. He's giving you like, I was this, I chose this, I kind of ran from the leadership and what I was being taught, and I don't want this to happen to us. I want to be able to be responsible with them because he's seen some of his inconsistency in his leadership.
All right, I can't wait to hear you on this next one, Dante. To college basketball, where Zion Williamson is fresh off his biggest game of the year, dropping 35 points and 10 boards in a loss to Syracuse Monday. But after her teammate Trey Jones got hurt in the game, NBA legend Scottie Pippen says Zion should, quote, shut it down to avoid risking a major injury that could derail his NBA career. I'm going to fire third again. Should Zion consider shutting it down?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're seeing it right now in football. You're starting to see the numbers increase, including the number one draft choice potentially in 2019 in Nick Bosa. We're starting to see guys like, hey, man, if situations arise where, A, I know my draft position relatively is high, and B, I have something to deal with in terms of injury or anxiety towards the injury, then I'm going to tap out. Guys are missing bowl games, important games. Guys are just saying, hey, there are too many workout gurus who can give you as much as you want off the field, off the court, as you can on the court when the NCAA is forcing these kids to meet their minimum requirements to go to the next level. If I am already satisfying that in terms of me being a prospect, what am I doing out there playing against Akron or whatever it may be? I'm not doing that. I'm not risking it. I'm here with a means to an end. I'm keeping my eye on the prize, and if it's to go pro and I already qualify, what am I doing in this collegiate
Dante, experience? Before you fire, I just want you to know, Coach K is watching. I talked to him before the show. Go ahead.
Why he doesn't quit is because it shows something about your character. And you signed up for something. You could have not went to college. You could have went prep, and you could have waited till you're 19. You could have gone to another school and done this. But he went to Duke because he obviously wanted to be a part of something special. He chose to play with players who are in his light. So guys who are looked at in the top five in the draft because he wanted to be a part of something special. So if you quit, you show about your character. If you can lead an NBA team when things may not be in your favor. And I think he is more high character than that. Not if he went to Duke or if he went to the other school. You'd be quitting on an institution. You'd be quitting on your teammates. You'd be quitting on a process of getting better and learning more about basketball.
You used the word quit about four times when I know that they forced him to sign into this situation.
You didn't have to sign. You could have went overseas. Okay. You had many routes to go to. You chose to go. He could have went to Clemson. He could have went to some other schools where he could have been the man and got to be the number one pick. He chose to go to a school that was going to fight for a national championship.
Right,
so he
right.
wanted to go to the NCAA tournament and probably fulfill one of his dreams.
The pressure that is put on his hand and that pen to sign there, we know is to optimize your opportunity. And he has optimized it and he has fulfilled it to me enough where he could get into the NBA draft and pick. Give you a case in point, high character guy, Trevor Lawrence. Wall Street Journal wrote an article saying he needs to sit out the next 2 years. Trevor Lawrence, if he sits out the next 2 years, is still going to be a top 10 pick, maybe number one pick. Why go through the rigors? And people don't think of basketball as a physical sport. Ask his teammate, ask Zion.
I'm sure the person who wrote that Wall Street Journal has never played an inch of college athletics or played it at that light. He is one of the things that we are not. The number one pick in the NBA draft.
Right.
Like, so he's going to be that regardless. But
so
you
why
cannot,
play?
But you cannot get back experiences. And playing in college basketball and playing for a national championship is an experience that I can't replace with anything else.
Boy, that sounds like, look, you keep your eye on the prize. If your goal is to go pro, get caught in a sitcom.
But
call.
Some people, see, and that's why I explain this whole Duke dynamic. People think that you go to Duke for something else then, but you go for the experience. You go to play for Coach K. You go to be a part of something. You just don't go just to be the number
so
one.
So why
pick.
Do you leave in a one and done situation?
Because you got
Coach K?
Because you
meet the minimum requirement.
You go to learn. There's a minimum requirement,
a
but it's not
of
all.
Learning?
It's not all the NCAA that it's your minimum requirement. Guys are taking other paths. You could go make more money and take another path. So it's not the only path right now. So if you take on that jersey, you want to go for a year. It may not be 4 years. You want to go learn. You want to go play, and you want to go be a part of something. And I think that's what he went for because he's having a blast. He gives energy. The one thing I like about the kid. He plays hard regardless of what he is on a draft board. He's giving life to his teammates. He's trying to learn and be better and be a more well-rounded basketball player, and that comes with more reps. And I don't think the injury that happened to Trey Jones, I don't think it's going to happen to that bulldozer.
All right, let me say this. I agree with both of you. I really
but I agree with him, too, though. Like, I understand his perspective, and I'm not saying he's wrong.
Awesome points about, hey, man, you could have went to South Carolina.
Right.
But you went to Duke to play for a national championship. You wanted the whole Duke experience. You want to be part of the Duke family. But I totally agree with you. Quitting, to me, isn't what he would be doing. Taking care of himself and his family mm-hmm. is what he would be doing if he chose to step away. And then the other part of me wants this whole amateurism system destroyed. And so I love seeing these kids pull the rug out from underneath these schools and universities that are making money off them. They need to figure out a way to compensate these pro-level players, the upper echelon players, while they're in college, to take this pull away from them. Compensate them. The NBA, the NFL should work with these universities to take care of these guys while they're in college, the ones with great pro prospects. All right, welcome back. Time to get antisocial. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. Joined by James Harrison and Mark Slareth. Time for my favorite segment.
There it is.
Our social media manager.
That Darnell pregnant Smith pause.
Right. Time for my favorite segment. What are you doing?
He's so excited.
Yeah, no, he pumped.
Excited. I'm very excited.
Let's do it.
All right, Darnell, walk us through these Twitter streets.
Yes, sir. Moving on to Fox's new hit TV show, The Masked Singer.
For real.
Where last night the deer was eliminated from competition and everyone was trying to guess who was underneath the mask. Social media was torn. Most people thought it was Peyton Manning, but others guessed it right, saying it was our guy, Hall of Fame quarterback Terry Bradshaw. Surprisingly, actually wasn't terrible. But would you guys ever do something like this?
Yeah, I'd love to sing, even though I can't. So
let's hear it.
I think it's somehow auto-tune my voice. I would love. I'm trying to think of what I would sing if I was
Luther Vandross.
No, no,
Freddie Jackson.
You know my favorite song is "Let's Chill" by Guy. I think it's by Guy.
Adele too.
I do love it.
And she don't move either, so you can just stand still. Just go. easy money right there, Adele. I would do it. Everybody would do it. But I am not a fan of karaoke, which is a close version of that, where everyone goes out there and tries to sing, and you know you can't. I know I'm not doing it for real, so I would do it, especially if it's in the Fox family. Why don't they ask us, huh? Well, anybody?
Man, I am so, I have not one musical bone in my body.
Really?
Oh, I'm awful.
Barry White, you got that deep voice.
Barry White. There literally, Barry White.
Yeah.
Barry White.
Barry Fish, I'm Fish Belly White, man. Come on, I'm from Alaska. What am I going to say?
Barry White. Right on.
Yeah.
I ain't gonna lie, I used to be able to hit a note or two, you know, until I started playing this football thing. I actually had a career that I probably could. I could have went into R&B, but my heart was into football. Mm. So I went with the football thing. Mm. But, you know, it's
hey, dog, you lying? Football don't take your vocal cords.
R&B, I was yelling.
You be rough bouncer?
I was yelling and screaming.
rough bouncer?
Calling out signals, bouncer. Making sure they can hear you. 65,000 people screaming. You took my voice away.
And there's so many
I can still,
athletes
you know what?
That can sing. Can you get a note right now? Because I don't believe you.
Give me a little bit of tea, and I'm going to hit that thing. It's water. It's water.
He talking about me.
Man, come on.
He caught a blitz and lost his voice.
Fox, I'll let you, boy. I'm right here.
All right, to a video that's been going viral. Oh, I'm sorry. Darnell, what's next?
So a video's been going viral.
There it is.
Adam Schefter posted this clip of 320-pound West Illinois D tackle Kalen Saunders doing some backflips. The NFL draft prospect is adding to his draft stock by showing off his athleticism. Saunders is heading to the Senior Bowl next week, and as a fellow big guy myself, I must say it's pretty impressive. But James, you're famous for your crazy workouts.
Yeah.
Are you impressed by that?
That's power. That's explosion. That's that's everything. That is very impressive. 320-pound man doing that. Man, I ain't been able to do a backflip since I was like 155 pounds. Like, it's over. That's power.
That's when you were singing that R&B back then.
Huh? Listen, man. I'm going to stop playing with you, man. I used to serenade them to sleep. They call me. I'd be on the phone, you know, in high school. Like, they'd be like, can you sing to me? I'd be like, yeah, I got you. You know,
go ahead and sing them to sleep.
So you ain't call no blitzes in high school when you heard your voice?
I didn't have to make no calls then. I was playing running back. I was listening to what the quarterback was saying.
I'm going to tell you what, if the game turns out to be a backflip contest, I want him on my team. If they just say, hey, we're going to line up and do backflips and the last guy standing wins, then I want that guy. I don't know if he can play, but the backflip.
Oh, he's explosive, bro.
So is diarrhea. I don't want it every day. I get explosive, but, you know, it doesn't mean you can play football.
I don't know, man. I bet you Aaron Donald can do something like that.
Oh, I'm sure he can. Aaron Donald's the best player in National Football League. That doesn't make him Aaron Donald.
No.
He's explosive.
Hey, that's a lot. I mean, that's why we go to the combine to show you what your athletic base looks like. Doesn't translate always to the sport.
Right.
But it does show you athleticism. Shout out to Proactive Sports also, which is right down the street. That's where he did that at.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Staying on the gridiron, Redskins running back Chris Thompson shared a story on Twitter of when Adrian Peterson first visited their facility before joining the team. Thompson said he went to talk to AP, assuming he knew who he was because of how well he played the last year. Apparently, the future Hall of Famer had no idea and asked Thompson mid-convo, so you play cornerback? Twitter assumed AP was just joking. But Thompson doubled down by saying AP seriously had no clue who anyone was. I think AP actually didn't know, or was he just trying to stunt?
I think he really didn't know.
Right.
Like, a lot of the times, you just don't know, especially just getting there or new guys coming in. Like, if you didn't play, like, 6 or 7 years with me, I probably can't remember your name. I'm not going to lie.
Ain't that true? Like, if they showed a team photo.
Oh, yeah.
They'd be like, who is everybody? Own? Yeah, I'd be like.
Who's number 63?
I don't know.
Who's 75 right there? Right?
Hey, man, y'all remember who 75 was 2010? Yeah. Like,
that's pretty humbling. That's pretty humbling for Chris Thompson. You in the league and your peers don't even know who you are, but I kind of like him revealing this over Twitter.
Yeah. I will tell you this, though. Like, most of the time when you're, as a player, you're studying film, you're like, well, I'm studying defensive film. I'm like, whoa, that 99 guy can move. Or that,
right.
I don't know the guy's name. I'm just like, hey, 97, when he comes in, his arm over move, man, it's something serious, you know? So I got to set take it away. I don't know anybody's name when I was in the league.
How many times you go to Super Bowl and you're like, hey, what's up, dog? Oh, okay. And then you're like, oh, that's you. And you're like, oh, what's up?
Hey, we just had our 10-year reunion, and I'm dapping up people and everything, and it's one guy, and I'm like, man, who is that? Man, he played right next. He was a D-line. I'm like, you for real, man?
Hey, what's up, man?
What's next?
Man, it's probably my favorite one. So this lady was at a yoga studio and ran into A-Rod, but didn't know it was A-Rod. Take a listen.
You got me thinking now.
Yeah, A-Rod. Alex Rodriguez.
Who's that?
That's the guy that J-Lo's dating.
You kidding me? Oh, that guy's handsome. What happened to the guy in the pajamas?
You're not, right?
No. That can't be. Hey, nice to meet you.
Oh my God.
Do y'all think this is real?
I'm trying to define.
That's
who
real.
Was flirting?
Oh, no. No. No.
There's a lot of people in that studio, and that's the one? Okay, all right, A-Rod. Better keep it focused. Bro. So, it was real by A-Rod, and it was fake by her. Because you know how many times people come up to you and they be like,
what I'm saying.
They're not sure, though. No. Sometimes they're not sure. They're sure. They kind of like, they're looking at like, it looks like him, but I'm not sure. I just had it before I walked over here. Guy was like, you look like James Chester. I'm like, I get that all the time. He's like, I'm like, dude, I get it all the time. He's like, can I take a picture? I'm like, yeah, take a picture. He's like, what's your name? So I can tell my friends. I'm from Mexico. I'm like James Harrison.
Okay, now he's from Mexico. She didn't sound like she was from Mexico either. But
your story fell apart, mate, when you said somebody came up to me. Nobody comes in.
Yes, they do.
Nobody comes up to
Yes, they do.
They go from a distance. They go, I think that's James Harrison.
If you catch me with a smile, see, if I smile, it's like they like, oh, I could walk up to him. But as soon as I see him coming up, like,
oh. See, Debo,
they walk away.
They faking the funk. This is what happened. They go up to you. They say, "Hey, you look like James Harrison." You say, "No, that's not me."
No,
you
I don't
sure
lie.
That's not James Harrison?
No. I say,
you know what? You are James Harrison. I'm saying, well, why didn't you just say that from the beginning? People do that all the time, like they stumble
they're
their way
sure.
into really.
I'm telling you, they're not know. Sure. I've got away with it a bunch of times where they be like, "You look like." I'll be like, "I get that all the time." They're like, "That's crazy. You look just like him." But thanks anyway, and they walk away.
Yeah.
All right, well, I love you.
All right, James, we're going to put you to the test. We found some tea for you to sing.
Yeah.
Come on, James.
Yeah. Hey, does that tea have honey in it?
It's got And you ain't called no blitz in a while, so your voice
for you
is
to
fresh.
Sing.
Oh, this ain't black tea.
Oh, man.
gotta get black tea. You gotta get black tea to me for my vocals to get right. I'm sorry.
Now you need the tea of the people?
What of the people. Hey, of the people. I gotta call Cap and see if I'm allowed to do this. I gotta see. I gotta.
He need permission.
I gotta get permission. I'm capping them. You know?
All right.